is Taking Aim with
Ralph Schoenman
and Maya Schoen. Today we're coming to you thanks to the WBAI Fund Drive at a different time. We're continuing what we started during our regular Taking Aim hour from 5 to 6 on Tuesdays with excerpts from our premium Barack Obama, False Hope, and Sure Change. Now, this is a premium produced exclusively by Ralph and myself based upon the programs that we've done it over the past year about Barack Obama as the presidential candidate, as the before he was even the presidential candidate of the Democratic Party, and his candidacy. Barack Obama, False Hope, and Sure Change. What you can expect and anticipate from the next years with Barack Obama as president. He was a hope for many, and clearly, in our eyes, a false hope, providing for each and everyone sure change. 212-209-2950. Change, as you will recall, was his mantra. And these are words that don't appear anymore in his presentations, either before Congress, before the public. You very rarely hear the word change. The only change he has is that we should accept the Great Recession. 212-209-2950. There are 13 shows. It's over 11 hours. 11 hours of program of intense documentation and analysis on one CD thanks to the technology of the MP3 format. You can listen on your iPod. You can download it on your computer. You can share this information with your friends, your family, and colleagues. Barack Obama, False Hope, and Sure Change. Again, the number is 212-209-2950. I want to start off just by saying that a few weeks ago, the head of the World Bank warned that there was a deepening global economic crisis, and it was going to unleash, quote, a human and developmental calamity. He announced that the global unemployment was going to rise such that 90 million more people would be, quote, trapped in extreme poverty. The number of chronically hungry people is expected to climb to over 1 billion just this year. And what is happening in the United States? What has President Barack Obama done? He has been coordinating, orchestrating, in charge a multi-trillion dollar bailout of the captains of capital. Russ?
Well, $13.1 trillion handed over to the bankers. And these are the bankers who, through their speculative derivative-based Ponzi schemes, have driven the country into economic impasse. Of course, it's a structural and a systemic crisis, but the captains of capital have long since abandoned any pretense to be advancing productive forces. The predominant mode of economic activity in the United States in this capitalist order has nothing to do with production. It has everything to do with speculation, with paper shuffling, with extracting an arbitrary value, a paper value with almost no collateral base, packaging that, securitizing in that, and then speculating further on it and trading this up and printing money like it was confetti. That's the nature of fictive capital. Barack Obama's advisors, Paul Volcker, Larry Summers, Warren Buffett, Robert Rubin, Bernanke, Greenspan, these are in fact hired hands of the bankers themselves, the banksters. Nowhere is this more illustrated clearly, brothers and sisters, than in the deliberate targeting of the automobile industry, General Motors and Ford and Chrysler, by the Barack Obama administration. And it is very, very well articulated in an article by Floyd Norris in the New York Times, brothers and sisters, called High and Low Finance, Why Chrysler's Bondholders Should Stop Whining.
And, Ralph, we're going to discuss this in more detail, along with requesting that you call 212-209-2950 and contribute to our station. Each and every one of us makes WBAI happen, bringing wonderful programming to us all 24/7, 24 hours, 7 days a week. Barack Obama, false hope and shortchange. Let's go to the excerpt, Ralph, of Barack Obama at the service of corporate and finance capital.
In our program today, Barack Obama at the service of corporate and finance capital. Ralph?
Well, Maya, this very important article gives an inside view, just as we had prior documented how Bill Clinton was selected by the insiders of corporate and capitalist America and vetted. This process was replicated with Barack Obama. Quote, he was still unknown in Washington circles. That changed the following month when Vernon Jordan, the power broker and corporate board member who chaired Clinton's presidential transition team in 1992, placed calls to 20 of his closest corporate friends to meet at his home with Barack Obama. And then they brought Gregory Craig, the attorney with Williams and Connolly, who was a key figure in the selection of Clinton himself. And the process began. Word about Obama was then spread through the Washington's, quote, blue-chip law firms, lobby shops, and corporate offices. Mike Williams, the vice president for legislative affairs of the Bond Market Association, became the main figure then for Obama. Quote, we represent Wall Street firms, Williams stated. There is a perception out there that the Democrats are anti-business, and I talked to him about that directly. He was forthright, which I appreciated. So what you're dealing here with is the vetting of Barack Obama by the Wall Street firms themselves, the Bond Market Association point person. He set up then, Williams did, a conference call between Obama and financial industry lobbyists, quote, that went very well. And in June 2004, Williams helped organize a little fundraiser for Obama at the Bond Market Association. It wasn't just a financial community. It was a broad cross-section of Wall Street. 200 turned out. Overwhelming support. Then Tom Quinn, the senior partner at Venable, one of the top lobbyists in town, was called by Williams and came to the fundraiser. I'm on the list. Everyone in political fundraising circles knows me, said Quinn, the power broker since the late 1960s for Wall Street. He contributed funds to Obama at the Bond Market Association event and began to make calls to all the people he worked with to get them to contribute and donate money as well. Robert Hamala, the big player in Democratic circles and a key figure for Wall Street, also was involved because he brought in Larry Duncan, the lobbyist for Lockheed Martin, the Venable client, who organized the affair. Quote, Hamala liked what he saw and continued to be impressed by Obama. So it is clear that the financial backers and the Wall Street backers and the Lockheed Martin Pentagon backers selected this man. Illinois-based Exelon Corporation, the nation's leading nuclear power plant operator, Obama's fourth largest patron. They have given more to Obama than to Clinton and McCain combined, brothers and sisters. So you are talking here about a purchase. He was auditioning, he was selected, he was vetted, he was organized, he is funded, and he is run.
Well, they got more than their money's worth for their contribution. During a debate on the 2005 energy bill, Obama helped to vote down an amendment that would have killed vast loan guarantees for power plant operators to develop new energy projects. The loan guarantees were called, quote, one of the worst provisions in the massive piece of legislation, end quote, by taxpayers for common sense and citizens against government waste. The public will not only pay millions of dollars in loan costs, but will risk losing billions of dollars if the companies default. They get what they pay for.
Yes,
they buy the candidates. And Ralph, before we move on to another subject, I want to return to his selection of his aides and his economic policy director. His new economic policy director is Jason Furman. As I mentioned, a close associate of the former Clinton administration Treasury Secretary and the current Citigroup executive Robert Rubin. Furman was a director of the Hamilton Project, a think tank that was set up by Rubin together with other wealthy Democratic bankers, corporate executives, and heads of major Wall Street hedge funds. Among the other members of the Hamilton Project's advisory council is Obama's recently departed vetter for the vice presidential candidates, James Johnson. The stated aims of the Hamilton Project include confronting fiscal imbalances, promoting entitlement reform. These are euphemisms for balancing the budget on the backs of working people. And this also means slashing social programs like Social Security and Medicare. Furman, as most of Obama's aides, is a firm proponent of, quote, free trade. So this is a clear signal, another signal to Wall Street, just as Bill Clinton's choice of Rubin as his chief economic advisor 15 years ago.
Well, Maya, that is what they call packaging the sellout, because the basic scenario here is that, by the way, it plays into the following. James A. Johnson was the chief advisor who was directing the search for Obama's running mate, and he was called out as a lobbyist, and so for cosmetic purposes, Obama removed him from that position. He was designated to be chief of staff for a Kerry White House and also Treasury Secretary. So you're talking about a key figure, and by the way, he had involved millions of dollars in insider loans and bonuses and approved hundreds and even billions of dollars of compensation for corporate executives. So Johnson was vetting Obama. "I have to hire the vetter to vet the vetters," said Obama. But it was Johnson as the...
He wasn't vetting Obama. He was vetting for Obama.
That's right. But that's true, Maya. But here's the point that is made very well by the World Socialist website. It was, in fact, Johnson who vetted Obama himself and determined that he would make a suitable candidate to defend the social interests of those very Wall Street figures for whom Johnson was the placeman.
And we want to thank Bill Van Auken of the World Socialist website, his article June 13th, "Obama Campaign Aid Controversies Underscore Big Business Control of the Democratic Party." Let's go back to Jason Furman. This is incredible when you read about Jason Furman, the economic policy advisor for Barack Obama. Van Auken writes, "Furman stirred up controversy within Democratic Party circles by publishing a defense of Walmart and suggesting that privatized Social Security accounts, a big plan of George Bush, and benefit cuts along the lines proposed by the Bush administration should be considered. He has written in favor of corporate tax cuts, bipartisan deficit cutting, and presidential vetoes of any measure exceeding the federal budget." Ralph?
Well, he is director of the Hamilton Project, which is the think tank that was set up by Rubin, as you were indicating, Maya. But what is the signal that Furman's role sends to Wall Street? Let's go through it. It means that the Rubin legacy of unprecedented rise in the stock market, enriching a thin layer at the top of American society, while creating the conditions of downsizing government, imposing NAFTA, and whipsawing workers across the globe in the mad rush to the sweatshop bottom, is at the heart of corporate policy for the Democratic Party. Conditions for the majority of the population were driven down vastly by corporate downsizing, stagnating real wages, and wholesale cuts to existing social programs. And, as you stated, Furman not only published the defense of Walmart, which is how, by the way, the Clintons made their careers through Sam Walton. They were deeply involved from the beginning with Walton and Walmart were the Clintons. But Furman proposes privatizing the Social Security exactly along the lines the accounts and benefit cuts proposed by the Bush administration. That's the real heart of this Obama candidacy. And indeed, it's interesting that John Sweeney was obligated to make a protest about the role of Furman. But for decades, the labor bureaucracy upheld the so-called Democratic Party labor agenda, which was in fact a Wall Street agenda, subordinating the struggles of working people to the Democratic Party. The Furman appointment was immediately approved by the Washington Post and its associate editor, David Ignatius, who stated, "Obama has chosen to help him move from the anti-NAFTA left of the party towards the pro-market center that traces its lineage to the Clinton administration and to the free market and to NAFTA and to the global economy. He writes in his column Thursday, the choice for economic advisor is a sign. Obama's policies involve facing the music. As Furman titled the Brookings Institution paper he co-wrote about repairing the fiscal damage, which means packaging the sellout, packaging a pro-Wall Street deficit-slashing policy, which means scuttling the social programs, scuttling Social Security. Yes, for all the talk of hope and change, brothers and sisters, it's small hope and it's small change.
And Ralph,
it's false hope and it's small change, excuse me.
And Ralph, that was apparent to Time Magazine. Time Magazine, June 9th. What is Obama's economic plan? A short piece by Justin Fox. In it, Fox asks, can Obama make this election a referendum on the U.S. economy? And their answer, not likely, because they note, quote, you can see the internal tensions within the Obama campaign. His economic advisors are moderate, mostly free market-oriented wonks. Again, as we've been saying, his economic advisors are straight out of Wall Street, straight out of pro-NAFTA, cut Social Security, keep the burden on working people, and the rest of it is just platitudes.
Well, it's not merely platitudes. It's it's soft soaping the working people of this country while selling them out the day after. And that's the role, as we saw with Mayor Wilson Good in Philadelphia after Frank Rizzo, the proto-fascist police chief, was replaced by Wilson Good. It's under Wilson Good's watch that MOVE was bombed. It's under Wilson Good's watch that the terror bombing of the black section of Philadelphia was undertaken. That's the agenda. That's the role. He breathes a little populist fire, and then he positions himself to implement the agenda of his masters.
And as Time Magazine, this is a mass market publication, as Time Magazine states that his ideas, they're not what you would call new or transformative either, although they're not necessarily bad ideas, Time writes. Mm-hmm. Obama throws in a few populist, quote, panders. He favors a windfall profits tax on oil companies. He opposes the raising of the Social Security retirement age, although it's going up anyway. And near the end of his speech in Raleigh, which kicked off his planned two-week push on speaking about the economy, there was a hint of his, quote, yes, we can vision, which was to give $4,000 a year in tuition aid to college students, note, who pledge themselves to community or national service after graduation. In other words, they're paying back the $4,000.
Don't kid yourself, Maya.
Not get them very far.
That's the transition to the draft, brothers and sisters. National service when you're targeting 100 countries. Here's a piece called Obama's Economic Advisors. Austin Goolsbee, University of Chicago, neoclassicist and free market advocate. David Cutler, the Harvard economist who argues that high health costs are good for the economy. Jeffrey Liebman, the Harvard economist who favors privatizing Social Security, brothers and sisters. These are the key economic advisors to Barack Obama. Now, the critical question here is the role of the Clinton administration in gutting welfare, in gutting social services, and, quote, downsizing government, unquote, and the very individuals who were the architects of that policy, the implementers of that policy, are the key economic people for Barack Obama, quote, Austin Goolsbee, a centrist market economist, The Washington Times, July 16th, 2007. His economics are not meant as a joke. His columns are written in the same vein as the neoclassical economist Stephen Levitt's Freakonomics, which is an all-out assault on single-payer recommendations for health care as violating free market principles. You get the picture. By 2030, predicts Robert F. W. Fogle, the Nobel laureate of the University of Chicago Graduate School of Business, 25% of the GDP will be spent on health care, making it a driving force in the economy. So what do they conclude from this? You gotta cut it. High health care costs are not bad for the economy. pass them on to the consumer, pass them on to the working people. That is the agenda. Jeffrey Liebman, the Harvard economist who co-authored the paper on the privatizing of Social Security as advisor to Bill Clinton, is once again back at his post with Barack Obama. He became, by the way, Reagan's chief economist, and then his cohort, Feldstein, an expert on the economics, Martin Feldstein of Social Security, advocated again the necessity to cut. Feldstein, as this article makes clear, fits nicely into the growing conservative movement which arose after the post-World War II boom came to an end. The Keynesian economics that were gospel at that time gave way to a pre-Keynesian theory of freely operating markets, free from the poison of government control and regulation as the solution. Led by the famous Chicago Boys and Milton Friedman, they carried the day. For years, Reagan railed against Social Security from his General Electric radio pulpit. And now here is the economist who lent professional credence to Reagan's reactionary views on this subject. Where are these people? They're at the center of economic policy for Barack Obama, brothers and sisters. That's what we're getting here. That's the shell game. That's the role of the Democratic Party. That's the role of fake populist liberals who soft soap, as I say, enlist the population by speaking to their aspirations and then selling them down the river.
Ralph, a point in Barack Obama's speech in Flint, Michigan, and also his interview with the Wall Street Journal in the same day that he spoke in Flint, he gave a long interview to the Wall Street Journal, June 17th. The Wall Street Journal wrote, "Barack Obama on economics, we're going through a big shift. His shift was the role of global technology." But in it, there is something that isn't getting enough attention. And that's what he considers the appropriate model. And it's one, quote, that the CIA put into place in Quintilla, where it basically partnered with the private sector to help subsidize investment in socially productive activities, but with an aim towards commercialization as well, end quote. Think about what he's saying. The Central Intelligence Agency partnering with the private sector, subsidizing investments. What they're talking about is industry that is beholden to the Central Intelligence Agency, and he is promoting this. This is a model that he considers innovative and appropriate for the United States. Very important to note the small things that appear in Barack Obama's speeches.
Well, Maya, I think it's important, and we're going to come to this in a separate program, but just to give you an anticipation of it, because Ken Silverstein makes a particular point of it in his piece. When Pennsylvania Congressperson John Murtha called for withdrawal from Iraq last fall, Barack Obama appeared before the Chicago Council on Foreign Relations and rejected Murtha's call, stating that we need to manage exit in a responsible way and leave a stable foundation for the future. He was immediately praised by conservative columnist David Broder because he stated Obama is helping to find a sensible common ground with Bush, pointing the administration and the country towards a realistic course in Iraq. Obama rejects any specific timetable from withdrawal, and even as public opposition to the war grows, and he continues with this shell game, brothers and sisters.
Ralph, a speech of his that garnered a lot of attention needs to be discussed, and you particularly wanted to bring it up in today's show. And that was his Father's Day speech. As the New York Times wrote June 16th, Obama sharply assails absent black fathers, an article by Julie Bossman. And it was in his Father's Day speech in a black Chicago church that Obama talked about his message, quote, "My life revolves around my two little girls." His life revolving around his two little girls, who he scarcely sees as he's out on the campaign trail. And in response to this, Bob Herbert wrote an important column in the New York Times, June 21st, a dubious milestone. Ralph?
Well, Maya, I think it's important to emphasize what the message is here from Barack Obama. It's the same message as conservatives have been giving. It's the same message, actually, that Farrakhan gave in his million-person march. blaming the victim. It's black fathers who have to take responsibility, black families that have to take responsibility. He said, and this is Barack Obama, half of all black children live in single-parent households, a number that has doubled since we were children. We know the statistics. Children who grow up without a father, 5 times more likely to live in poverty and commit crime, 9 times more likely to drop out of school, 20 times more likely to end up in prison. They are more likely to have behavioral problems and run away from home and become teenage parents themselves. The foundations of the community become weaker because of it. How many times in the last year has the city lost a child in the hands of another child? How many times have our hearts stopped in the middle of the night with the sound of a gunshot or a siren? How many are sitting in prison when they should be working and looking for a job? How many are willing to lose to poverty or violence or addiction? We need more cops on the street. We need fewer guns in the hands of people who shouldn't have them. We need families to raise children. We need fathers to realize the responsibility does not end at conception. We need, what is Barack Obama doing here, brothers and sisters? He's blaming the victim. He is hell. Here you have a war on black America, a devastated inner city, where there is as much as 60% and 70% unemployment, where the schools virtually don't exist, where the housing is a rat-infested squalor to which people are condemned, where a black man is more likely to end up in prison and indeed is an endangered species. So what do you have Barack Obama the siren of? Blaming the victim. Oh, it's black fathers' absence of responsibility for caring for the young. Black fathers who are unemployed. Black fathers who are targeted for prison. Black fathers who have no schooling and no opportunity at affordable housing. How are you supposed to find employment that can sustain raising a family when there's a social policy which is designed to pauperize the victim sector of the ruling class, the most oppressed sector of the ruling class? What we are looking at here, brothers and sisters, is the role of Barack Obama, blaming the victim, sustaining the system, and selling out the many at the service of those who have purchased him as a hired hand.
Again, this is Taking Aim with
Ralph Schoenman
and Maya Schoen. You've been listening to Barack Obama at the Service of Corporate and Finance Capital. This is one of the 13 programs that are included in Barack Obama False Hope and Short Change, jam-packed MP3 formatted CD, $60 contribution to WBAI. It's over 11 hours of programming. Just think, 11 hours on this one CD for your contribution of $60. 212-209-2950. Max Pringle is with us, who's going to help us and let us know how the boards are lighting up. Meanwhile, Ralph, you had started to talk about the United Auto Workers.
Well, I was citing an article, Maya, by Floyd Norris in the New York Times on May 2nd, called High and Low Finance, Why Chrysler's Bondholders Should Stop Whining. And as he spells out the deal that's being cut here, how the actual banker owners of the automobile companies, the bondholders and the like, are not only being protected, but that the workers are being asked to take the hit. Here's what he says. The conclusion of this remarkable expose article. The retirees are the ones that are going to get hurt. The current workers are getting little more than being allowed to keep only some of their jobs. Walter Reuther, the man who built the United Auto Workers, must be spinning in his grave at the concessions his successors are making. This will become to be seen as Mr. Obama's Nixon in China moment. Just as it took a conservative Republican to open relations with the largest communist country in the world, it took a liberal Democrat to break United Auto Workers.
Ralph, let's look at some of the specifics. The concession of the United Auto Workers that is revisiting their contract included an immediate cut in retiree health care, the elimination of the cost of living adjustments, supplemental unemployment benefits eliminated, limits on vacation time, expansion of part-time and temporary labor. And Ron Gettelfinger, who is the UAW president, had told the UAW members that passing this revision in the contract would save jobs, and it did pass with an 80% majority. Only a few days later, Chrysler declared bankruptcy, was forced into bankruptcy by none other than President Barack Obama. And in the announcement of its bankruptcy, Chrysler management said that it would permanently close 5 functioning plants, 2 in the Detroit area, the Sterling Heights Assembly and the Connor Assembly, an engine plant in Kenosha, Wisconsin, an assembly plant in St. Louis, Missouri, a stamping plant in Twinesburg, Ohio, and that by the end of 2010, and possibly much earlier, it will also close 3 plants that it's already idled. And that's only the beginning. What Chrysler did when it entered bankruptcy was it stopped all production. It suspended production indefinitely at all its facilities in the United States and Canada, pending the bankruptcy hearings. So everyone at Chrysler is out of work, and everyone at the assembly plants that supply the materials for Chrysler will soon be on furlough. Think about what is happening here. Again, please get to your phone, 212-209-2950. Barack Obama, false hope and sure change. If you've been a Taking AIM listener, you know the value of this CD. And if you're new, you've had a brief excerpt, a 20-minute excerpt of the 11 intense hours. Get on the phone, 212-209-2950. This is not available anywhere else. You can't go to Amazon.com. You can't go to your corner bookstore. You can't go anywhere on the Internet. Only for WBAI is this available for your contribution to your radio station, 212-209-2950. Ralph?
What we document in this series, brothers and sisters, is the extent to which this handful of bankers who are at the heart of the speculation that has bankrupted the entire country have been rewarded. They have been privileged. Not merely have they been bailed out, not only have they been allocated $13.1 trillion while the vast austerity and cuts have been imposed upon working people, but the toxic debt, that is to say, their collapsed speculation, is being rewarded by the government subsidizing the acquisition of these toxic debts and rewarding the same bankers by making sure that they make money on it by virtue of the government subsidy of the acquisition. They are guaranteed a profit on the very toxic debt that is the result of their failed speculation. That is why the stocks go up for the banks, and that is why the bankers are sitting pretty, and the bonuses, the billions of dollars of bonuses, have gone through the roof higher than they've ever been before. Meanwhile, brothers and sisters, as this series documents, what is the exact correlative for the working population of the United States? Jerry White, May 5th, 2009. Chrysler bankruptcy set stage for the assault on General Motors workers. Last week's decision by the Obama administration to drive Chrysler into bankruptcy was a deliberate political act ratcheting up the pressure on General Motors workers to accept even deeper job cuts on wages and benefit concessions. This has been acknowledged by administration officials, news commentators, and the United Auto Workers president himself in the days following the bankruptcy announcement by the third largest automaker last Thursday. The refusal of a handful of Chrysler bondholders to accept a reduction in their debt payments was used as the pretext by Barack Obama to implement a long-standing plan to push the company into bankruptcy, which lays the financial and legal groundwork for canceling all the contractual obligations to the workers. The task force for this was led by wealthy investors Stephen Ratner and Ron Blum, deploying the crisis on the instruction of Barack Obama to restructure fundamentally the auto industry and to guarantee large returns to Wall Street while eliminating jobs, reducing the living standards of auto workers, drastically reducing wages and benefits won through generations of struggle. eliminating 33,000 jobs in the United States alone for Chrysler. 27,000 hourly workers remain, compared with 110,000. In this planned restructuring of General Motors, Obama is seeking to carry out an even more ruthless and rapid downsizing. Here's what the New York Times chief White House correspondent David Sanger stated. Fresh from pushing Chrysler into bankruptcy, President Obama and his economic team are hoping the hard line they took will give them leverage to force huge concessions in General Motors, a far larger and more complex company. Huge concessions, tens of thousands of jobs eliminated, factories closed nationwide, elimination of health care plans and pensions, brothers and sisters, it's a war, as was spelled out on May 5th by Patrick Martin. Chrysler and GM set the pace. The administration of Barack Obama spearheads wage cuts for American workers nationally. That's the documentation that we've been putting together in this series, brothers and sisters, the actual agenda of the bankers, of the Wall Street masters, and the role of Barack Obama in orchestrating and implementing this while deploying his credentials as a nominal spokesperson for the interests of the working population to destroy their living standards in a permanent way.
Change. Change was the mantra. Barack Obama, he was going to be the hope. There was going to be change. Well, what has the change been? Change has been more unemployment, more money to the ruling class banks, more money and fewer jobs. Barack Obama, false hope and sure change. Get on your phone, get to your phone now, 212-209-2950. Here at WBAI, we have been speaking truth to power. From the beginning, we have been saying what is going on. Who is Barack Obama? How was he selected? Who selected him? That was part of our initial programming in 2008. Barack Obama, the Democratic Party, and the corporate state. False hope and sure change. We answered your questions. We discussed this with you on air. We provided many hours of documentation, and this combines. This is encapsulated in this CD. It's like a 1,000-page book, 212-209-2950. Get on the phone now. Contribute to WBAI and have this for yourself, for your friends, for your colleagues, for your family. Without awareness, it's impossible to organize. Without awareness, without the documentation, without the analysis, it's impossible to be effective and to create real change.
And brothers and sisters, the kind of programming that we're discussing here, the radical truth, the exposé of the structural and institutional nature of the crisis we are facing is what Free Speech Radio is supposed to be about. The programming that this represents is the continuity with those who have struggled to maintain it in Pacifica and in WBAI. If you support those efforts and those associated with it, brothers and sisters, and I think you understand me clearly, you need to support Taking Aim, and you need to support the analysis and the radical insight that it provides, because we are arming ourselves intellectually and politically for struggles ahead. The New York Times reported Sunday that compensation of six of the largest United States banks has returned to record levels that preceded the financial crisis of last year. The article, based on analysis of the financial reports, reveals that Goldman Sachs, Morgan Stanley, Citigroup, J.P. Morgan State, Chase, J.P. Morgan Investment Bank, and the Bank of America have set aside more than $36 billion in the first 3 months alone to compensate their top employees. If this pace continues, the Times writes, the money set aside for compensation suggests that the top executives of these banks will see their bonuses recover from the lows of last year and go to the highest paid levels for the traders and executives on historical record, brothers and sisters. More and more and more and more and more and more of the evidence of this scheme, this plot, this savage reordering of the economy's priorities to benefit the gangsters, the banksters, as we call them.
And, Ralph, all the reports of the Wall Street rally and the increases in the stock market, all that occurred as the unemployment rate soared. Why is that? That's because the taxpayer money and the future taxpayer money, the hard-earned money of each and every one of us, and the increased debt, all that in the $12 trillion and more, still more, all that money was transferred to these banks. And the banks then wrote off these bad debts as they transfer them to the government, and then they show an increase of their books. They show that they're profitable and their stocks rally.
And guess who's involved in this, Maya? People like Robert Rubin and Ratner and Bloom are the people who are associated with Goldman Sachs.
And, Ralph, we did a specific Taking Aim show about these gangsters. These gangsters who are the officials of the U.S. government stealing from us to replenish their coffers.
They're wearing both hats. These are the architects of the theft, the collapse, the entire toxic debt phantasmagoria at Goldman Sachs, at Citigroup, at Morgan Stanley, at J.P. Morgan Chase, at all of them. Now, the Times reports Goldman Sachs has set aside the largest compensation windfall, $4.2 billion for one quarter. If that level continues, it will add up to an average pay of $569,220,000 of bonus per executive, more than they paid in the record year of 2007. J.P. Morgan Chase's investment unit is on track to award its executives bonuses of over $524,000, over $150,000 higher than in 2006. Huge amounts are justified on the grounds that the substantial profits are being reported now by the banks for the first quarter of this year. Brothers and sisters, bank profits for the first quarter of 2009, those are not profits. Those are $13.1 trillion of handouts by Barack Obama to these same banks without any accountability, without any obligation to invest in anything except the buying up of more failing companies to enrich themselves, and then hell with the consequences, brothers and sisters. This is the gravamen of this series, this 13-part series, brothers and sisters, the documentation, the relentless setting out structurally and institutionally of how capitalism is functioning at this moment in history, at a point at which it is no longer in any remote sense able to address the elementary survival needs of the mass of our population. Barack Obama is not merely its victim, he is its administrator, its conscious instrument, and we have to be clear about the character of the political party, the Democratic Party, that is administering late capitalism in conjunction with Wall Street's Republican supporters, Democratic supporters. We forget the political label. It has to do with class allegiance. The 1% of the population that owns more than 95% of us combined. Let's be clear about what this programming represents. Be clear about the importance for the future of free speech radio, that we are able to bring this kind of understanding and analysis and documentation every week to our listeners, so we are prepared. So we are armed. So we see the way forward clearly. We begin to mobilize. We begin to organize. Right now, this is the 75th anniversary of the general strike of 1934 in San Francisco, when the International Longshore Workers Union electrified working people across the United States. The prologue of the future, brothers and sisters. We need to be able to continue this programming to prepare us for the struggles that lay ahead. Major struggles, major triumphs, a transformational moment in the history of our society.
Max, the telephone number, 212-209-2950.
And we had a nice flurry of calls. We had a good start, but we're down to only one caller on the line at the moment. The tally is slowly rising, $535, but we'd like to double that, certainly, by 8 o'clock.
Oh, more than double it.
212.
Let's get on the phone. This is Taking Aim. We aim high.
Yeah, we want to match the 5,000 we did last week in 1 hour, brothers and sisters. Let's keep it going.
212-209-2950. Again, the number is 212-209-2950. Everyone's had their dinner. They're relaxing. And you're saying to yourself, oh, this is sad news. No, this is hopeful news because we are dispelling the illusions. And this is something you must share with your friends, your family, and your colleagues. You have to have the information, accurate information. You have to have an understanding because only then can we change our situation. That's why I like to think of taking AIM as a self-help program. We are providing you with the instrument to affect change. Barack Obama, False Hope and Short Change, $60 contribution, 212-209-2950. Today we're listening to a program about how Barack Obama got picked as the nominee at the service of corporate and finance capital. It's an amazing tale. You only heard an excerpt of it. There are several programs that go into this chapter and verse. Whatever avenue of struggle you consider, Barack Obama is going to sell it out. 212-209-2950, because that is his role.
Well, Maya, it's not as if the established media, I want to be very clear about this, brothers and sisters, the data, the information, brothers and sisters, is there. What we do is connect the dots. What we do is take away the hype. What we do is show the underlying reality that this information illuminates. November 11th, 2008, Why Obama Assents to Deals is the headline by Andrew Ross Sorkin in the New York Times. Quote, antitrust theory is theoretical. Losing jobs and plants is real. David Boies, the super lawyer the government hired in the 1990s. It was Saturday, just 4 days after Senator Barack Obama won the presidential election, and Mr. Boies was already laying out how the deal landscape in general and Washington's policies in particular were likely to change over the next 4 years. We're having lunch on the Upper East Side, and Mr. Boies, between bites of salmon and asparagus, is working his cell phone for yet another high-profile deal. He's representing Morris Greenberg, known as Hank, In his fight with the American International Group, the troubled insurance giant Mr. Greenberg used to run.
Mr. Greenberg used to run, and now the United States government is the largest shareholder of AIG. My goodness, what
And what is the Times say? Speculation is swirling. The Barack Obama government is about to overhaul its rescue and lobbying to help shareholders like Mr. Greenberg.
And
answering the question, helping who, brothers and sisters? Helping the victims of these policies? Helping working people who are one paycheck away from being homeless? No. Helping the banksters. Helping the architects of financial catastrophe with $13.1 trillion.
And, Ralph, the United States government is the major shareholder in, let's say, AIG. Is this public ownership? No. They've set up a trusteeship, and they have people from the finance industry managing, representing, so that there's a distance, a long distance. If we had this opportunity to assume public ownership of the major means of production, we would have a transformation here in the United States, but that's not what's happening. Instead, our hard-earned dollars are being stolen. The future of our children and grandchildren is being stolen, and instead, the money is all being given over to, as you say, the banksters, the gangsters. And you needed someone such as Barack Obama. You needed a face. You needed a face like that. You needed an effort, a hope, a sense of change and transformation, an illusion in order to accommodate this, because otherwise the people of the United States would be up in struggle.
Well, brothers and sisters, on May 9th it was announced that the banks have indicated that they require another $8 trillion. Another $8 trillion. U.S. bank stress tests rigged to benefit Wall Street is the article. The release of the bank's stress tests on Thursday has provided further confirmation that the Barack Obama administration is determined to protect the wealth of the financial elite. 10 of the 19 biggest banks have all of which have received taxpayer funds, require immediately $74.6 billion in additional capital. All of the banks are adequately financed, and the financial system as a whole is more than sufficiently financed by these government handouts. And Federal Reserve Chairman Ben Bernanke stated, the results released today should provide considerable comfort to investors. You're damn right it's comfort to investors. Trillions of dollars more is scheduled to put in their pockets, brothers and sisters. Is there any more clear manifestation in the reports in the established media of what is at work here? A system in terminal decay, a paid-for administration that is essentially their instrument of permanent control, and we are the conscious and continuous victims of this process. We need to be clear. We need to have the evidence. We need to have the information assembled. We need to have the understanding that goes with that, and we need to have the will to carry on the political struggle, the mobilization of the many, the organizing of working people at the point of production to act in their own interests, to struggle together in their own name, and to put forward an agenda that can transform society. We've done it in Minneapolis in the 1930s. We did it in San Francisco with the Longshore 3-month general strike, and that is the little beginning of what will unfold in the United States as these inevitable processes manifest themselves so clearly when the mask is torn, when the mask falls from the eyes of people, and we see the reality as it is clearly before us. Please support this programming, brothers and sisters.
212-209-2950. Remember, you heard just a brief 20 minutes of this 11-hour CD. 11 hours on one CD for your contribution of $60. Barack Obama, False Hope and Sure Change. Some of the 13 programs on this CD, Barack Obama, the Democratic Party, and the Corporate State, False Hope and Sure Change. There were several parts to that series. And then Entrapping Barack Obama, the Underlying Politics of the NAFTA Disclosure, that goes into how the disinformation campaign is structured. Barack Obama, Not a Dime's Worth of Difference, specifically talks about the projected policies, which have come to be the actual policies of Barack Obama, and how there was not a dime's worth of difference between those policies and those of the Bush administration. Barack Obama and the ethanol scam, serving the captains of capital, shows how Barack Obama, when he was Senator Obama, worked hand-in-hand with the large conglomerates such as Archer Daniels Midland. Barack Obama at the service of corporate and finance capital, of which you heard an excerpt. Barack Obama embracing the totalitarian state, something we are going to discuss week after week on Taking Aim, only if we can keep WBAI on the air. Very important. What we set out in the first program of a Barack Obama embracing the totalitarian state. Again, we had many call-in shows. There were 5 call-in shows in this series, which have been edited, in which we respond to your questions. So here's an opportunity to hear questions from the WBAI listeners and our responses, such as an assessment of Barack Obama, soft soap and sellout. Soft soap is what Ralph was speaking about before. And Obama's real mandate, the real essence of this, preserving capitalism. That is not an economy and a society in our interest, but for the few. Obama's war cabinet, the depths of duplicity, of which we're going to hear an excerpt in the next hour. And last, on Inauguration Eve, discussing President Obama preserving a decaying capitalism and what we mean by capitalism in decay. 13 programs, over 11 hours of programming, 11 hours and 15 minutes, and I edited them once again. These are edited and re-edited, so they're very tight. I'm sure you're going to like each and every one of them. You can listen on your iPod. You can download them to your computers. You can share this information with your friends, your families, and your colleagues. 212-209-2950. Let's keep those volunteers in the pledge room active. And Max, do we have some people to thank?
I have asked for those cards, but I have a feeling that the person on tally is a little overwhelmed. We have had a great many calls. At the moment, though, as we come up to the top of the hour, as we approach 8 o'clock, we're down to 3 calls, so that means there probably is a volunteer or two in the back now who is not taking a phone call. And if you were one of the people, at one point every light was lit up and only half of them could be answered. So if you called 5 minutes ago and didn't get through, try back right now. I see there are 3 calls yet to be picked up, but and only 2 calls in progress. So there's a good chance for, if you call now, that you can get right through 212-209-2950. And remember that even after we start the next segment, that's a better time to call because, you know, you'll have more of a chance of finding a volunteer free. And if we, if anyone out there can help us out with the phones tonight or indeed for the next 2 weeks as this fund drive progresses, call the same number and let us know when you can come and help us with the telephone so that we can get you in the computer system to get into the building and help out.
And Max, you bring up an important issue, and that is of volunteers. Ralph and I are unpaid producers. We are volunteer. We volunteer our time and our effort to bring you this information. But it takes funds. It takes a lot of funds to pay the rent, to pay the transmitter, to have the basic engineering staff and production staff at WBAI. Please, we depend on you. Listener-sponsored radio. Most of the effort at WBAI is volunteer. And WBAI can only function with the funds that come from each and every one of you to maintain the basic infrastructure of this station. WBAI, with its 90-mile radius, and those of you who are listening via the WBAI stream at www.wbai.org, most of you have these long-distance plans where you can dial for no extra cost, 212-209-2950. In the first hour, we had people calling from other states. Now is the time for you, too, to call from whether you're in Arkansas or you're in Maryland or you're in Washington, D.C., if you're in Oregon, in Illinois, you name the state, the 50 states.
And remember, you can pledge online also. You don't even have to get off the computer. You can go to WBAI.org and pledge online quite easily as well. I think we take PayPal or credit card payments there. We can probably even arrange to send you a bill through the Internet.
Consider this, brothers and sisters. We quoted earlier the World Bank president warning that the economic crisis poses a human calamity. How about the International Monetary Fund, the primary instrument of capital? The organization's Global Financial Stability Report, published on Tuesday, predicted that the total credit write-downs worldwide will exceed $4 trillion and that the world banking system is close to insolvency. This is coming out of the mouthpieces, the organizations of capital itself. Look at the reality here, brothers and sisters. Please support this programming so we can continue to marshal the evidence, to mobilize the information so that we can mobilize the many for struggle.
Remember, it is WBAI that brings you Taking Aim. It is WBAI. This is the only station that brings you Taking Aim. WBAI has maintained the archive. We have our archive on our website. But without WBAI, without the radio station, without the opportunity to come to you in your cars, in your homes, in your work, at your workplace, Taking AIM wouldn't have existed.
Just consider this, brothers and sisters, at the G20 summit, Christine Lagarde, the French finance minister, told the Financial Times, "I have this concern. People are going back to the old games, going back to making money and exploiting as much as they can." And then Guido Martagna, the Brazilian financial minister, stated the following: "The overriding issue is cleaning up the global financial system. If the U.S. has banks with toxic assets and refuse to clean up the system, this crisis will last and deepen for a long time." The Obama administration responded by attempting to challenge the IMF bleak picture of the bank balance sheets, and the IMF responded by saying the write-offs at the U.S. banks will total another $2.7 trillion. The beat goes on. The evidence is there. Even the instruments of capital in other countries are taking note of the magnitude of this crisis. We can do no less. We must continue to be able to bring you this information, brothers and sisters, and above all, to draw the implications, the political meaning, and to prepare ourselves for the struggles that flow from that understanding.
And, Ralph, at this time, 8 o'clock, I am going to say, take note of WBAI station identification. This is WBAI, listener-sponsored radio, 99.5 on the dial and on the Internet at www.wbai.org. We have in the studio
So just to make it official, this is WBAI New York.
Oh, right.
It is 802.
WBAI New York, 99.5 on your FM dial.
And
thanks
we have
a lot, Max.
We have another segment ready to go. We have three callers on the line at this moment. We see six or seven calls all trying to get through at the same time, and then it drops down to only three that remain on the line.
That means there are probably three volunteers in the pledge room at this time.
Well, there were a few more the last time I was back there, but that's been a while, so maybe they've drifted off.
Okay, so this is the time to say, please be patient. We're approaching, this is the evening. Please, be patient. If you don't get through to a volunteer, try again. 212-209-2950. Remember, it is only on WBAI that this premium is offered. Barack Obama, false hope, and short change. You're not going to find this on PBS. You're not going to find this on NPR. You're not going to find this on the Internet.
And I'm really amazed with the MP3 format that you can get 11 hours on a single disk. So what a bargain.
13 hours, man.
No, 13 programs, Ralph. I edited them down.
But that's 3 months of programming, weekly programs.
Right.
For a $60 pledge. It's quite amazing.
We don't have a cough. We don't have an We don't have an This is intensely edited, although we don't have too many coughs, ums, and us. Just think, you have the benefit here on WBAI of decades of lectures, decades of research, of decades of life experience from Ralph Schoenman and myself, Maya Schoen. Taking AIM, I have to say, for us, is a unique program. We are not a magazine format program. We are a program of analysis and of documentation, as each and every one of you know. And as Max says, it is through this MP3 format, and Kathy suggested that we do this because these programs were so hard-hitting and the response was so great to these programs. So I went through each and every one, and I made them as intense as they could be. And that's how we have Barack Obama, False Hope, and Short Change. It is our self-help program for our WBAI listeners. Self-help in the sense that with this information and with this analysis, you can make effective social change. You can improve your life. You can improve the lives of your family and your friends and your community. Now we need to contribute to WBAI, our station. Our station that makes this available, our station that provides us with culture and analysis in the news, please, 212-209-2950. And let's go to the excerpt. This is the excerpt of Obama's War Cabinet, The Depths of Duplicity.
This is Taking AIM with
Ralph Schoenman
and Maya Schoen. Our program today, Obama's War Cabinet, The Depths of Duplicity. Barack Obama was elected president by tens of millions of Americans, hoping that he would end the war in Iraq. They had expectations that he would be a peace candidate. But far from bringing an end to U.S. militarism, President-elect Obama, in announcing his new administration, is preparing to consolidate a U.S. presence in Iraq and escalate the war in Afghanistan and precipitate a war with Pakistan. The prospect of this dangerous new war looms as Obama's advisors lay out their plans for confronting Iran, too. On Monday, December 1st, Barack Obama announces his war cabinet. New York Senator and former First Lady Hillary Rodham Clinton as Secretary of State. Robert M. Gates, the current Secretary of Defense and former CIA Director, remaining in his position. General James Jones, the former NATO commander, overseeing the troops in Afghanistan, and currently a pitchman for the U.S. Chamber of Commerce position on energy, will become the National Security Advisor. Interestingly, the peace groups are giving Barack Obama time. They are saying he hasn't even been in office. Let's give him a chance. Yet, as Stratfor, the think tank of intelligence, commented on November 26th, quote, Obama's supporters believed that Obama's position on Iraq was profoundly at odds with the Bush administration's. We could never clearly locate the difference, Stratfor commented, and then went on to say, the brilliance of Obama's presidential campaign was that he convinced his hardcore supporters that he intended to make a radical shift in policies across the board without ever specifying what policies he was planning to shift and never locking out the possibility of a flexible interpretation of his commitments. Let's look at what one of his stalwart supporters said. Marilyn Katz, a veteran of the peace movement dating back to her days as a member of Students for Democratic Society. She helped organize the October 2002 rally in Chicago's Federal Plaza, where Obama declared his opposition to what he called, quote, a dumb war. She admitted that many liberals chose to ignore the part of the speech that Obama had made in that Chicago Federal Plaza that they forgot, where Obama stressed that he was not against military force, and he actually urged more aggressive pursuit of Al-Qaeda. Barack Obama is consistent with a position of a war cabinet. Quote, Katz said, a lot of people took his position on Iraq and projected our politics onto him. And that was never him. It was never true. Today on Taking Aim, we discuss Obama's war cabinet. Ralph?
Maya, the former apartheid prime minister of South Africa, Verwoerd, once said famously, it is possible that not every liberal is a communist, but I have yet to meet a communist who didn't pretend he was a liberal. And what Verwoerd was alluding to was this posture of those who are, in a sense, the legatees of the Stalinized Communist Party in the United States and indeed in the world, to provide cover for a sector of the bourgeoisie and forever to foment the illusion in that sector of the ruling class and to induce those who are aspiring to challenge or to change the politics of imperialism and the inevitable exploitation and repression and criminal rapacity of the capitalist ruling class, forever to mislead and to direct those who want change into the arms of their very oppressors. These are liberal enablers, for the real obstacle to change in our society constitutes not support for the, quote, right wing or the Republican Party or that wing of capital that is explicit, but rather for those who purport to represent some modification or some reform containment of the ruling class, but in fact are as deeply embedded in the implementation of these ruling class policies as any of their colleagues who are, for cosmetic purposes, postured as nominal opponents. When we listen to the mewling and bleating of those who had whipsawed people into supporting the Democratic Party yet one more time, casting aside their intelligence and their experience into one more time beating the bushes for support for another Democrat, another faker, another misleader, what kind of language are they using about the war cabinet of Barack Obama? It's deeply disturbing. This is continuity. This is not change. It reminds me of Casablanca, the famous film with Humphrey Bogart, which had its own Stalinist content. We could address that another time. When the police commissioner in Casablanca, who has been taking money for his cut from the proceeds of gambling at Rick's place, wants to shut down Rick's. He says, gambling? Gambling? I'm shocked. I'm shocked. Pro-war politics on the part of a Democrat? Deception on the part of the president-elect when it comes to determining policy? I'm shocked. I'm shocked. It's what the Jesuits call invincible ignorance. The selection by Barack Obama of his cabinet flows consistently with the embrace of the ruling class, with his call for continuity, with his politics of moving across partisan lines. Let's refer back to the program that we did last week. We ended with a discussion of the Attorney General selected by Barack Obama and the so-called illusion of change. Eric Holder was the enabler of the pardon we discussed of the billionaire fugitive investor and Zionist operative Mark Rich. And that was done through the corruption of the then-president of the United States, Bill Cheney. But the enabler...
Bill Clinton.
Excuse me, Bill Clinton, yes. The distinction is also in the slip. Clinton and Mark Rich were like lips to the teeth. And Mark Rich, by the way, was represented in his quest for a pardon from his multiple crimes and sequestering of corrupt funds by, appropriately enough, Lewis Scooter Libby. But the person who facilitated this was Eric Holder, the black functionary who was the first African-American to become now, as the New York Times put it, the nation's top law enforcement official. What's particularly important about the role of Eric Holder, because it illuminates what this representative of the ruling class really amounts to, and I'm speaking now of Barack Obama. Eric Holder was in the party's leadership for police state measures enacted under the Bush administration. Eric Holder played the leading role in the reauthorization of the Patriot Act in 2005, for which, of course, Barack Obama also voted. Eric Holder parlayed his government service into a lucrative position at the Washington, D.C. lobbying firm of Covington & Burling, which counts big tobacco amongst its most important clients. Eric Holder... His most high-profile case was his representation of Chiquita Brands International, whose multimillionaire executives faced charges of aiding terrorism because they armed and financed the right-wing death squads of Colombia. And Eric Holder was the enabler. He got Chiquita off the hook. He made arrangements with the Justice Department that instead of indicting them for conspiracy to commit murder and assassination and holding them for criminal charges for the deaths of thousands of Colombian peasants, they were not fined more than 0.55% of their annual revenue, despite massive evidence and the company's own admissions that it had paid out tens of millions of dollars to the so-called Self-Defense Forces of Colombia, known by their Spanish acronym AUC. They carried out the massacre, assassination, kidnapping, and torture of tens of thousands of Colombian workers, peasants, trade union officials, and left-wing political activists. Half of the payments were made after AUC had already been designated a foreign terrorist organization and a full year after the Justice Department, pro forma, warned Chiquita that it would face prosecution for aiding and abetting terrorism if it did not cease to provide the funds for the assassination program in Colombia. But this was official policy. It wasn't just Chiquita. It was Dole Pineapple. It was Del Monte. It was Coca-Cola. It was at the heart of the politics of the Clinton administration, and the facilitator for the death squad operations in Colombia was the now Attorney General of the United States, Mr. Holder. The champion of so-called civil and democratic rights? The defender of the oppressed? No, the legal servant of the corporations involved in criminality, in mass murder, and repression. And the chief law enforcement officer for the transition team and the facilitator of Eric Holder as Attorney General, why the current FBI Director Robert Mueller, who will be maintained. He will be maintained in not only the politics of Bush, but in the politics of Holder under Clinton. Death squad apparatus, death squad operations. And Gates and Holder are, again, like lips to the teeth. Cohen Hallinan on September 10th, 2008. Business as usual for the Obama administration. The return of U.S. death squads from Afghanistan to Africa. Philip Alston of the United Nations Human Rights Council has stated that heavily armed international death squads are murdering scores of Afghan civilians. He spoke to a series of operations across Afghanistan coordinated by the United States and, of course, its Secretary of Defense, Mr. Gates. But that's not just a matter of Afghanistan. The AFRICOM that's now being set up across Africa to facilitate U.S. securing of complete dominance and control over African oil is accompanied by what? Why, death squads, special forces, CIA units. This is the politics of Holder, and it is the politics of Gates, and it's above all the politics of Barack Obama.
Ralph, your point is well taken. Let's return to the Wall Street Journal and its editorial of November 28th, Obama's War Cabinet, with the subtitle, Gates and Jones Are Welcome Signs of Continuity. Continuity is exactly what the Wall Street Journal promotes. The names floated for Barack Obama's national security team are drawn exclusively from conservative, centrist, and pro-military circles without even a single, yes, not one, chosen to represent the anti-war wing of the Democratic Party. Now, that is not a quote from the Wall Street Journal. The Wall Street Journal is herein quoting Robert Dreyfus, who wrote in The Nation magazine on its website. But what the Wall Street Journal states, who are we to interfere with Dreyfus's despair? The Gates selection, the Wall Street Journal notes, is an implicit endorsement of President Bush's surge in Iraq and its military architect, General David Petraeus. More broadly, it recognizes that America will continue to deal with a daunting post-9/11 security environment. Most tellingly, the Wall Street Journal notes that the people of the United States are going to be too busy, as they say, too preoccupied with the economy, end quote, to notice what Barack Obama is doing. And Mr. Obama will have plenty of political running room, one, as a result of Americans being preoccupied with the economy, and two, with their giving him room to move. Quote, his own pledge to remove most combat troops by 2010 leaves open exactly what he means by combat and most. The new status of forces agreement with Iraq also commits the U.S. to leave by 2011. These decisions can now be made with a view to the realities in Iraq rather than to the American campaign trail. End of quote. And the New York Times substantiates what is said in the Wall Street Journal. On November 27th, an article by Tom Shanker, who writes on the military for the New York Times, Common Ground for Defense Chief and Obama. As defined by his commander-in-chief, the mission of Defense Secretary Robert M. Gates for the last 2 years has been to win the war in Iraq. But beginning on January 20th, Mr. Gates' mission will be to end the war in Iraq, notes the New York Times, under an agreement with a new commander-in-chief, President-elect Barack Obama. This contrast might seem to leave Mr. Gates consigned to serious whiplash. But what the New York Times reporter Tom Shanker notes is that there is no whiplash. In fact, there is common ground. Currently, there are 15 combat brigades out of 50 brigades in Iraq, with the other brigades providing supplies, protection, and care of the troops. But there are also an equal number of private support personnel, that is, mercenaries and private personnel hired by Blackwater and the other companies. So when they talk about moving troops, what they are talking about is maintaining troops in Iraq, as many as 70,000, and then shifting troops to Afghanistan. As Mr. Gates told Congress in September, quote, "I would urge our leaders to keep in mind that we should expect to be involved in Iraq for years to come." Ralph?
Well, Maya, Barack Obama did an interview on Democracy Now! In which he addressed specifically the question of troop quantities and the number of troops to be maintained in Iraq. He stated that he intends to retain 140,000 mercenaries, these contract killers. It's Blackwater, it's DynCorp, it's the whole panoply of privatized killing apparatus that is answerable to nobody except the proto-fascist collusion with the repressive state. He stated he intends to maintain 140,000 of these mercenaries in Iraq and up to 100,000 additional U.S. troops. Barack Obama doesn't have to depend upon Robert Gates for a politics of support for escalation of the war in Iraq. He is the articulator of this very program himself. He is not merely being aided by those he is appointing to his cabinet. He is calling the shots with respect to that policy. And that's the gravamen of having the continuity of Robert Gates. And the Wall Street Journal is very clear. If the reports are correct, and the president-elect asks Robert Gates to stay on as Secretary of Defense, and if he names retired Marine General James Jones as the National Security Advisor, these are the administration posts most critical to the successful conduct of new wars, not just the wars in Iraq and Afghanistan, but of wars with Iran, of North Korea, and who knows where else with these personnel picks. For Mr. Obama has revealed his bias for competence, experience, and continuity. The Gates selection is an endorsement of President Bush's surge in Iraq and its military architect, General David Petraeus. More broadly, it recognizes, states the Wall Street Journal, that America will continue to deal with the post-9/11 security environment. As a member of the Iraq study group, Mr. Gates was against the surge before Bush made support for a condition of his taking the Pentagon job. But he has supervised the successful, new, enhanced, enlarged counterinsurgency strategy in Iraq and championed a new generation of military leaders, chiefly General Petraeus, who commands U.S. forces with a policy that will be applied across the Middle East as he pours additional troops into Afghanistan. Is there any ambiguity about this, brothers and sisters? This is the agenda for the expansion of imperial reach, for increased warfare, for a huge increment in the number of troops. And what about the cost of that, as they spend $7.7 acknowledged trillion dollars on the captains of capital? Every spare penny that isn't put into the pockets of the bank kleptocracy will be put into the pockets of the merchants of death, as the apparatus of military rule is expanded on a planetary scale. That is why Obama's cabinet selections, as the World Socialist website stated so presciently on December 1st, win high praise from the right. Prominent voices from the political right are endorsing President-elect Barack Obama for his economic and national security teams. It's not just the Wall Street Journal. A rave from Karl Rove. Now, there's an endorsement that tells you a lot. Karl Rove is ecstatic over the appointments by Barack Obama, calling them sound, intelligent, reassuring, competent, inspiring indeed, is the language that Karl Rove, the shady trickster of the Bush administration, lavishes on Barack Obama, who the Wall Street Journal points out. The person who talked about a speedy withdrawal from Iraq by selecting James Jones, the former Supreme Allied Commander of NATO, is reassuring us that the surge strategy in Iraq will be applied generally. President-elect Obama has given us reassurances about his future policy, his ability to shape it, and the quid pro quo between Gates and Obama Gates has staked out his positions on missile defense in Eastern Europe, enlarging the military, modernizing the U.S. nuclear arsenal. Indeed, the very national security hallmarks of the Obama administration, which is embracing, by the way, note this, brothers and sisters, missile defense in Eastern Europe, that is escalating the challenge to Russia, putting missile defense in Poland, putting missile defense in Czechoslovakia, targeting all the major cities of the former Soviet Union and of Russia itself. Is this an agenda for anything more than expansion of military reach and expansion of war, brothers and sisters? The common ground, the New York Times tells us, for Defense Chief Gates and Obama, for the last 2 years there's been a common ground. For the last 2 years, the politics of expansion of this war has been the common ground shared by Barack Obama and Mr. Gates. The rhetoric for the public has been rhetoric to do what? To con people, to enlist them, to seduce them, to essentially, what? To effectively castrate a movement for transformation of our society, to take away its essence and to confine it to the politics of collusion and collaboration.
An excerpt of Obama's War Cabinet, The Depths of Duplicity. This is only one of 13 programs on our premium, our donation to you, our gift to you, for your donation of $60 for Barack Obama, False Hope, and Short Change. Please get on the line. This is the last hour we're on today. 212-209-2950. It's your opportunity to contribute to WBAI and to get for yourself this incredible CD. 13 programs, 11 hours, over 11 hours, it's 11 hours and 15 minutes, Barack Obama, False Hope, and Short Change. 212-209-2950. And our engineer, Max Pringle, is going to try to...
It's actually Schmied. Max
Pringle, Max Schmied,
is a wonderful journalist somewhere.
Sorry, Max.
We have a lot of people to thank from the first break, but before we get to that, I would like to get the phones ringing now so that we can thank people before the end of this break. We're well on our way to the $5,000 goal, but we're going to have to do better than we did in the first hour right now, and we do have still three volunteers in the back. Some people have left, so when you call 212-209-2950, you're going to have to be a little patient. Although right now there's one caller on the line, which means we can take two or three more right now without any problem at all. So start calling 212-209-2950. Get this. It's a single CD with 11 hours, 13 programs condensed into one disc for a mere pledge of $60. You become a member of WBAI. And you get this thank you gift from Taking AIM. 212-209-2950. Let's get moving now. Let's get the ball rolling. Join the caller on the line. 212-209-2950. And we'd like to thank. Should we start thanking folks while we wait for those lines to start lighting up? 212-209-2950. There's a second caller. Can we get a third call now? Let's get this thing going. Let's
keep
light
those lines with three opportunities. Let's keep them lit permanently. This is a real test. 212-209-2950. We're going to keep those lines lit throughout. Barack Obama, False Hope, and Short Change, only available with your contribution to WBAI. Remember, $60 contribution is not the limit. If you can contribute more, all welcome. Please do so. Barack Obama, False Hope, and Short Change. Nowhere else will you find so much information on one CD over 11 hours. Ralph?
Well, May 7th in The Nation, Tom Hayden, notwithstanding his liberal framework, began a two-part essay called Understanding the Long War. And he is acknowledging what we and others have been describing as the permanent war characteristic of late capitalism, articulated by the spokesperson for Franklin Roosevelt at the 1944 when he talked about the necessity for a permanent process of war and militarization in the pursuit of an imperial agenda explicitly. But in this essay, The Concept of the Long War, he cites CENTCOM Commander General John Abizide speaking in 2004, and then he cites the leading counterinsurgency theorist, John Nagel, who has been made the head under Obama of the Center for New American Security. Quote, there's a growing realization that the conflicts of the next 50 years will be a continuous irregular warfare in an arc of instability that involves us in much of the greater Middle East, Africa, Central and South Asia. The Pentagon's official quadrennial defense review commits the United States to, quote, a greater emphasis on fighting insurgencies in this arc of instability. The implications, Hayden says, of this doctrine are staggering. Indeed, they are. A 50-year war assumes the consent of the American people, who have yet to hear of the plan. A 50-year burden in the midst of a financial crisis. A 50-year burden of permanent and escalating war to which Barack Obama is inextricably committed. A burden which cannot be met with the consent of the American people, brothers and sisters. A burden that can only reflect massive repression and the architecture of the fascist state within the United States as well.
Now, Ralph, that reminded me of one of our premiums so long ago. It was on cassettes and was entitled Why War? It was a series we did analyzing, just what you said, the imperial adventures and how we got to where we are today here in the United States. And this shows you what we at Taking Aim offer each and every time there is a fund drive. Something new, something innovative, and something that we produce ourselves. It's not going out shopping and coming up with somebody else's product. This is WBAI produced. 212-209-2950. Your $60 contribution, make it part of your library. You will not, you will be so happy to have this. Barack Obama, False Hope and Short Change, empower yourself. Get the information, get the analysis to empower you for effective social change. Ralph?
Well, Maya, Tom refers to what he calls the new counterinsurgency as a return to the Indian Wars. That, indeed, is a very important insight, one that we have ourselves articulated over a long period of time. Interestingly enough, the thesis was confirmed in the writings of Robert Kaplan in the Wall Street Journal, in an article in the journal called Indian Country. And Kaplan is obsessed with the need for continuous small wars carried on off camera. And he quotes U.S. officers, you want to whack the bad guys quietly and cover our tracks with humanitarian aid projects. Whack the bad guys quietly? They're talking about assassination programs, about off-the-book CIA killing programs that Barack Obama has recently sanctioned and expanded, brothers and sisters. And indeed, this article by Kaplan states that conventional war against the Plains and Western Tribes Indians was an unsustainable strategy and that the native people had to be overwhelmed by an inexhaustible supply of settlers. And in fighting the new Indian wars today, we need an American footprint on the ground, he states, a strategic military framework for the 50-year long war, requiring taking advantages of divisions between societies, within societies, along lines of religion, ethnicity, race, and geography, pitting people against each other. Counterinsurgency. What this was described as refers now to Vice President Dick Cheney calling the use of what is called the dark side. And here, interestingly enough, is the imagery of Mr. Nagel, who is now the head of this program of Obama. The use of the dark side. The occupying army must be seen as defeating those neighbors, killing and wounding the alleged insurgents in significant numbers, destroying the infrastructure in villages, creating an exodus of refugees, and forced urbanization. The population considered friendly to be tightly guarded in what was once called strategic hamlets in Vietnam, in Iraq called gated communities, behind concertina wire, glass walls, watchtowers, everyone subject to eye scanners, the lines between enemy, friendly, and neutral fluid, guaranteeing people to be targeted as, quote, irreconcilable sympathizers with insurgents. Brothers and sisters, this is the perspective of the Nazification of U.S. policy in war after war across this planet.
Ralph, we see it today in the New York Times, front page, May 12, 2009, Commander's ouster is tied to shift in Afghan war by Elizabeth Buemiller and Tom Shanker.
That's in today's newspaper.
That's right, Tom Shanker, who writes on military policy for the New York Times. When he is reporting about the ouster of the top U.S. commander in Afghanistan, General David McKiernan, a very experienced general, this is the first time a general in a combat area has been ousted since the Korean War, when MacArthur was removed by President Truman. So we have here President Obama removing the top commander and replacing him with Lieutenant General Stanley McChrystal, a former commander of the Joint Special Operations Command, who served in Afghanistan as the Chief of Staff of Military Operations in 2001 and 2002, and recently ran all commando operations in Iraq. He himself was a Green Beret.
And this is called an approach to bring a more aggressive approach to the seven-year war, a more aggressive approach. He is credited with tracking Saddam Hussein, with tracking and killing Abu Musab al-Zarqawi, the Abu Musab al-Zarqawi they had killed long before, the false flag operation that represents. He uses intelligence and firepower to track and kill insurgents. His training is in unconventional warfare directed against the population. Confronted with deep tensions over the conduct of special operation forces in Afghanistan, whose tactics, the New York Times reports, are seen by Afghan officials as responsible for the deaths of countless numbers of civilians.
And this is who Barack Obama, it's, you know, like President Kennedy, the belief in the covert actions, the Phoenix program, this is what we have going on. Because it's interesting to note that the Pentagon now defines Afghanistan, Pakistan as a war theater, and it's called AFPAC, including Pakistan.
Maya, this is Max Schmid back in the studio. I'm afraid we have a situation here where you're being too interesting now, and the calls have dropped off to a trickle. I think we really need to get the phones lit up one more time before we can continue providing information.
That's right. We will not talk. You know, you can hear us after the fun drive. It's because of these fun drives that you can hear us talk, talk, and more talk. Remember, it's 55 minutes of straight talk. No interlude,
straight talk. Brothers and sisters, what we're doing here, by drawing the current and moment of the moment manifestation of this analysis, is illuminating for you the significance of the data that we have assembled and the analysis that informs it, because we see this as ideological capital. We see this as arming all of us so we are equipped to respond to the crises unfolding, to mobilize for struggle, to reach out to our brothers and sisters, to remove the scales from their eyes about the underlying politics that inform these murderous policies. Please, sustain these efforts. Sustain the access to this information. Support what free speech radio is supposed to represent. And all those who over so many decades have been associated with that work, many of you will know to whom I am referring.
212.
That has to continue, brothers and sisters. We have to
209.
Keep faith.
Yes, Max?
212-209-2950. We have only two callers on the line, and we're going to need about 20 more callers to get close to our goal, and we have 20 minutes to do it in. That's one call a minute, which should not be difficult at all. You can join the likes of Tim Durst from Ross.
Tom Durst.
Tom Durst from California. Yes, calling from California to pledge on this program for WBAI.
A devoted supporter of Free Speech Radio, absolute dedicated brother involved in this effort and this struggle. And we're so grateful for Tom for his continued support for Free Speech Radio and for taking AIM in particular.
And we thank Henry Orlo, 212-209-2950, so that we can thank you, too. $60 for the CD with 11 hours, 13 programs of Taking AIM for your future studies. Thanks to Michael Smith of Manhattan, 212-209-2950, and Doris of Newark, New Jersey. Thank you, and Tom again. Another pledge, and William of Kew Gardens, New York, thank you, 212-209-2950, someone must join the two callers on the line now, we have volunteers standing by, tally is, we haven't broken the halfway point yet, 23:45, we've got to get another 2,000 plus in the next 18 minutes, 212-209-2950, thanks to Claudette Trimmingham of Flushing, 212-209-2950, and Ed, I think that is, Kuhn of Princeton, New Jersey, thank you, Jared of Toms River, New Jersey, four callers on the line, can you be the fifth, 212-209-2950, support WBAI.
We had a challenge. We've had Tom Durst from California. We have a challenge for people in Oregon, in Washington. Some people listen to the show later. They go to the WBA archive or they go to the Taking AIM archive. You can still call in then and contribute. But the best time to contribute is if you're listening via the stream, to get on the phone now, 212-209-2950.
And let me thank in particular our brother in struggle and long-standing comrade Michael Smith for his support for Taking AIM. Michael, who is the producer of a very important program on WBAI, Law and Disorder, which we urge all our listeners to listen to continuously. I want to cite one thing here, brothers and sisters. Here's a piece by Jeremy Scahill, with whom you will be familiar, because it's Jeremy who had done so much to expose Blackwater. Obama readies troops as Afghan pile up body parts. As rage spreads in Afghanistan after U.S. bombings kill 130 people, Pentagon officials are spinning another cover-up, and the defiant Obama moves ahead with troop increases, sending an additional 21,000 more U.S. troops into Afghanistan as anger rises across the western province of Farah, the scene of a U.S. bombing massacre that killed 130 Afghans, including 13 members of one family. And here is, I just have to, this one particular excerpt from Jeremy's comment. This is in the New York Times. In a phone call played on a loudspeaker on Wednesday to outraged members of the Afghan parliament, the governor of Farah province, Rahul Amin, stated that 130 civilians had been killed, according to a legislator, Mohammed Naeem Farahi. The governor stated that the villagers brought two tractor trailers full of pieces of human bodies to his office to demonstrate the casualties that had occurred and which were unfolding across Afghanistan. Everyone at the governor's office was crying, watching that shocking scene. This report, brothers and sisters, is the little continuation of the meaning of these policies, the role of Barack Obama, the role of this administration, the role of the imperial war machine. We need you to support this effort, brothers and sisters. This is part of the struggle.
212-209-2950. Max, do we have all three lines lit up?
We only have two at the moment, which means there's room for another caller or two. 212-209-2950. For a $60 pledge, you become a member of WBAI. You get to vote in the upcoming local station board elections, and you get the satisfaction of knowing that you've done your part. You also get, for a $60 pledge, this MP3 CD with 11 hours of research. And, you know, Obama has had the most favorable press coverage in the first 100 days of his administration of any of the last five or six presidents. But here you get a critical look at his administration, something that maybe the mainstream media is afraid to tackle. Where else but WBAI are you going to get this critical analysis? And we must make sure that WBAI remains on the air for that to continue. 212-209-2950. The tally is inching up. 2405. There are three callers on the line, but there's room for you now. 212-209-2950.
And we still have more than halfway to go to our goal, and we have 15 minutes to do so. So please let us flood the lines. 212-209-2950. I'd like to say this is truly our gift to you, the gift of our time for our research, the gift of our production, and the gift of our editing and re-editing these shows so that it is fully compact. Where else? It's like getting an encyclopedia or getting a thick book, but here is something for you to listen to while you're driving, listen to while you're working, listen to while you're jogging, listen to while you're at home on your computer, or listen to with friends. Share the information. Have an event at your home and have a discussion after you hear the program. Please call 212-209-2950. Years ago, there were these events such as that. Ralph's parents participated with KPFK. People would listen to a radio show, and then they would have a discussion afterwards. It was very popular in the 60s, and we should visit that again. Invite people over, listen to a show, or listen to one of these premiums, and have a discussion. And from that discussion, lead yourselves to demonstrations or to other forms of effective change. Please, 212-209-2950. Take a first step. It's a $60 contribution, and our gift to you is Barack Obama. False hope and sure change.
And we've had as many as five callers. We're down to four now. And we need at least 10 more in the next 12 minutes to reach our goal, 212-209-2950. And when you're ready, I have more people we can thank as well.
Oh, do it now.
Okay, Lane Kubiak is getting the disc, as is Marilyn Gratton, or Gretton, Bonnie Kernis of...
Bonnie Kernis, who is an extraordinary person who has done so much in the American Friends Service Committee and in the struggle to expose the condition of prisoners across the United States and the condition in prisons.
And an invaluable resource for another one of our WBAI premiums in the past, Buried Alive.
John Scott of Fleetwood, Pennsylvania, so another out-of-state and on the fringes of our signal. Perhaps listening over the Internet, and if you're listening over the Internet, you can pledge online at WBAI.org, or you can, if you're listening to this in time delay, chances are good that whenever you're listening to this, there will still be people waiting to take your call, and you can ask for this premium at any time while this fund drive persists. 212-209-2950. Thanks to... Davies Knox, perhaps? Oklahoma, okay.
Great. Thank you for calling from Oklahoma. I'm going to repeat. Most people have long-distance services where there is no charge for this call to WBAI. Now is the moment. Thank you for calling from Oklahoma. 212-209-2950.
And all the way from the Bronx, John DiGiorgio. Thank you.
Thank you, John.
And now we have another huge stack of pledges for people who don't want to be thanked, but we'll thank them anyway.
We'll thank you collectively, as you see in all this anonymous.
Well, we
thank
have
you.
Someone from Orange, New Jersey. Someone from Jamaica. Someone I know from Jamaica, former programmer. Someone from the Bronx and Brooklyn, all the boroughs represented, and Manhattan, and Summit, New Jersey, and Basking Ridge, New Jersey, 212-209-2950. And another from Manhattan. Thank you, Thomas. And Charles from Jamaica. And Anne, thank you. Jennifer from Belmont. And someone from Queens, thank you. And someone from Brooklyn, thank you. East Orange, New Jersey, thank you. New Rochelle, Westchester, thank you so much. Who else? Lawrence, Kansas. Anonymous in Lawrence, Kansas.
Thank you, all of you from the tri-state region, and thank you those of you who are making the effort to call from out of state. This shows you the value of WBAI with its stream and the website to keep it going so people can hear. As we produce the programs, they are listening. Thank you so much. And then on the archive, you can have it, what they call it, podcast, right onto your computer, or you can go to the Taking Aim website, takingaimradio.com, where thanks to Mark Bilk, we have almost 8 years of programming. But you will not have these highly edited, compact in one location, CD, $60, Barack Obama, False Hope, and Short Change. And not only do you have the gift, you have the sense of contributing to WBAI, listener-sponsored radio. Important to keep it around, important to have the access, the 90-mile access, the tri-state. Think of what that means for our movement. Please get on the phone now. Let's keep them all busy. 212-209-2950. Ralph.
Yes, in today's Washington Post.
Ralph is ready with more information. Make sure you call while he speaks.
And the British Guardian, quote, in the final days of his trip to Washington, President Hamid Karzai demanded an end to U.S. airstrikes in Afghanistan. In response, U.S. National Security Advisor General James Jones insisted that the bombing of Afghan villages will continue whether the country's sovereign government likes it or not. Brothers and sisters, the British Guardian quoted an official with the United Nations mission in Kabul who called the reports of these bombings and their consequences horrifying.
Ralph, we have to mention it was on the excerpt. James Jones was selected by President Barack Obama.
And what is the United States preparing in Pakistan? Between 600,000 and 1 million Pakistanis have been turned into refugees just in the northwest frontier province alone, brothers and sisters. And in the federally administered tribal areas, hundreds of thousands of more. The U.S. policymakers and Barack Obama have launched a war of devastation across Pakistan. Now they are targeting Balochistan. Now they are targeting the Pashtun areas of Pakistan. 170 million people are involved here, brothers and sisters. This is an arc of terror, official state terror, administered by the government of Barack Obama, the imperial regime, permanent war.
I'm struck by terror now myself because we only have one caller left on the line, and we need to get another six or seven callers before 9 o'clock.
Okay, so
212.
This is a great push. 212-209-2950. Doesn't have to be this way. We don't have to have only one caller on the line. We can fill those lines. We don't have to be victims. We can make the most of our lives. In order to do so, we have to make intelligent choices. To make intelligent choices, we need knowledge and we need analysis. And that's what we attempt to do and we feel we are doing and we are doing with Taking Aim each and every week. And it is thanks to WBAI that we have that opportunity. So now is the time to step up to the plate. Now is the time to keep each and every one of those lines busy. There are people who have volunteered their time to come down to the 120 Wall Street to take your call, to talk to you, to help you, to help yourself. Barack Obama, False Hope and Sure Change, your $60 contribution, your membership in WBAI, and if it's a member, it sustains your membership, and it is your contribution to yourself. You are not giving it to somewhere else. It is not going to to pay someone else's bills. It is going to pay your bills because without the station, you would not have Taking Aim. You would not have the news. You would not have the cultural program. You would not have the call-in programs. Please remember this, 212-209-2950. We've put a lot of effort into Barack Obama, False Hope and Sure Change, and we know you will appreciate it.
And it's 8:55. We have less than 5 minutes to go before, I guess, Delphine Blue with Shocking Blue coming up. Some music to relax us. But let's get one last burst of energy here. Let's light up the lines one more time. There are three callers currently on the line. We can get three more. We need six more. So someone, please, right now. Maya, are you scheduled to be on again anytime in this fund drive that you know of?
Next week.
Next week.
Next week from 5 to 6.
Okay. So,
but believe me, this is the best opportunity. The best opportunity to contribute is now. Don't put it off. So often people tell me they've put it off, they put it off, they had something else to do, and then the premium isn't available because we're not on. So please,
and
now
we're down,
is the moment. Don't delay. Don't procrastinate.
We're down to two calls again.
209-2950. Don't say, oh, I'm going to go to the Internet later. Please, now, join us. Join the many people who have called already today. We made this at an affordable price. It's 11 hours of programming. We're not asking $200, $300. No, it is a full $60 to WBAI. Our gift to the station, your gift to yourself. 212-209-2950.
With 3 minutes to go and no callers. Our last call has been completed.
Brothers and sisters, San Francisco Chronicle, desperation in Pakistani hospitals and refugee camps. Civilians cowering in hospital beds, refugees looting UN supplies, desperate for relief. Troops and warplanes continue their attacks, brothers and sisters. That's the reality that we're describing here. That's the documentation that this series provides. That's the call to action that summons you to support the continued flow of this information and analysis and the radio station that makes it possible, Free Speech Radio, WBAI. Please call in, brothers and sisters.
Okay, finally, the two calls coming in. We need three or four more in the next 2.5 minutes. Let's get that final burst of support, get the last chance to get the Obama CD, $60 for an MP3 disc, 13 programs, over 11 hours of material for your future listening and study. Still a few people left to thank. Gerald of New York, Andrew of Manhattan, Claude of Brooklyn, Asher in Brooklyn, and that only accounts for the first hour. We have two callers on the line. We're waiting for you. 2 minutes. We need to get another one or two callers, or let's fill up the board again. 212-209-2950.
Let's fill up the board. Let's go out with a bang. Let's show that we can do it. That's it. When Barack Obama talked about change, those were words. Those were platitudes. That was a false statement. We are talking about real change. And in order to do that, we need to keep on broadcasting. This is only the beginning of the struggle, brothers and sisters. This is not the end. This is the beginning. Let's keep going.
And
please,
I don't know.
Let's have our last burst. Let's keep those lines. Let's meet our goal.
I don't know if our tally is up to date here, but we could use someone pledging $150 right now that would bring us, from what I see here, to at least $3,000. Now, I suspect that we're not up to date with the tally, but if you have a little more to give, this would be a good time for a nice large amount to push us over. But you can become a member of WBAI for as little as $25, and every member, that's what's important, not the amount that you give, but the fact that you choose to become a member and keep WBAI moving forward. 212-209-2950, 45 seconds to go. Now, I'm not sure. I have not actually seen anyone appear to do a 9 o'clock program yet, so we may have an extra minute or two. We have broken...
We'll stay on as long as necessary, Max.
Okay, well, I see we have... the tally now reads over $3,000. Not enough. There's a third call coming in. Join that call. 212-209-2950. In 12 seconds, it will be 9 p.m. This is WBAI New York, 99.5 FM, WBAI.org on the World Wide Web. And we ask you now to go to the phone, support this radio station. You can use Visa, MasterCard, or American Express. We can send you a bill. If you'd like to make monthly payments, we can make that arrangement. You want to pledge a small amount, $20 a month until you've paid $60 to get this premium, or maybe you want to give $20 a month all year long. We can do that, too. Four callers on the line. Can you please join those callers? We're now into shocking blue time. I'm hoping that Delphine will appear momentarily to bring us through the rest of the evening. If not, well,
we'll continue.
We'll think of something. 212.
It doesn't take much. You should see the stack of information that Ralph had prepared for this show.
Those crunchers, we're happy to stay with us, brothers and sisters. And if Delphine is a little delayed, we'll continue.
I see a friendly wave coming down the hallway.
Oh, good.
So I guess Delphine is with us.
I was taking pledges.
Oh, she was taking pledges. Well,
Thank you, Delphine. Thank you.
Our hardworking staff not only produces music programs and wonderful new music, but also helps out in a pinch. How many folks are in the back now?
We have like four, and it was lively.
You know, you disappointed. There were several volunteers who left immediately upon finding out you weren't coming in last week. Oh, that was terrible.
Tell the story.
Well, Delphine, thank you so much.
Can we turn this over to you?
Well, if you would like to come in and help volunteer tonight, we have Delphine Blue for the next couple of hours, and that will be followed by, I guess, the news at 11. But tonight we have the Moorish Orthodox Radio Crusade. Bill Weinberg can use some help. Tom Whisker with Weaponry, bringing you up to date on military affairs, can use some help in the overnight, and then, a music show at 3:30. I'm not sure which one this evening.
Thank you, Max.
Oh, well, thank you. Yes, thank you, Ralph and Maya. You'll be back next, Tuesday?
We'll be back next Tuesday, and we may be doing more as well. We're waiting to hear.
Okay, well, with $3,090 in the tally, I'm going to go to the theme and urge people one more time to join the two callers, the three callers on the line, 212-209-2950. Thanks, everyone. Even if we didn't get to call your name, we thank you, and we urge you to stay tuned now for Shocking Blue with Delphine Blue.
Good evening. You are listening to listener-supported WBAI here in New York City at 99.5 FM. The name of the show is Shocking Blue. My name is Delphine.